I'm Amy Eddings, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. Students in Iran hoping to study in the United States may be out of luck thanks to a new wave of sanctions aimed at punishing Tehran for enriching uranium. Earlier this month, the Educational Testing Service said it was suspending registration for its tests in Iran, including the popular test of English as a foreign language, also known as TOEFL. TOEFL is widely used by Western universities to evaluate students' English proficiency. Some Iranian experts fear the halting of the tests will isolate Iran's young people even more. The Educational Testing Service said it had to stop the tests in Iran because it can't process payments due to the new sanctions. Joining us to talk about the effect of this on Iranian students is Jamal Abdi, Policy Director of the National Iranian American Council. Welcome to WNYC.
Hey, thanks for having me, Amy.
Also joining us is Scott Jazschik, editor of Inside Higher Ed, an online news source focused on higher education. Hi, Scott. Welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And we want to hear from you. Should politics play a role in who gets to study here? Or is cultural exchange the solution to our bigger diplomatic issues? Call us at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. We're particularly interested in hearing from students, foreign students who are studying here in New York City. Post your comment to our show page at WNYC.org or to our Facebook fan page. Jamal Abdi, how do you think the suspension of the test is going to affect students in Iran looking to study abroad? What are Iranian students saying?
Well, first of all, let me just we kind of have some breaking news that ETS has gone ahead and resumed testing for Iran. They've managed to figure out a solution to the problem. They found a bank that can actually process transactions. And so they said that they're going to resume these tests.
Wait a minute. Aren't sanctions sanctions? Why would they find a bank willing to process the payments when other banks cited the sanctions as reasons not to, as a reason not to?
Right. Well, so because of the sanctions, a lot of banks have actually been exiting Iran. Over the past year, the Treasury has been working to persuade a lot of foreign banks to end any transactions they're doing with Iran. They've convinced banks that, you know, these are it's risky to do business in Iran, and so, you know, they should withdraw. And especially now that the UN sanctions passed and the U.S. sanctions passed and the EU sanctions passed, a lot of these banks have left the country. But after ETS announced that they were going to suspend the test as a result, you know, NIAC and other organizations and groups have called on the U.S. government to take action and convince some bank to process these transactions, and apparently ETS has found a bank that is willing to do that. So for the time being, there's a way to actually, you know, have students in Iran pay for these tests and then get those payments over to ETS so they can continue to offer them. It's not clear, though, if this is a long-term fix. And really, you know, the main concern here is that this is just the very first reaction that we've seen to the new sanctions. It's unclear if you know, like I said, if this is permanent, if there are going to be further unintended consequences from the sanctions. We already see that people are suffering because of the gasoline sanctions and because of the sanctions that prevent insurance for shipping to Iran. And so this is really just the first iteration.
Hmm. Do we know what bank stepped forward?
I don't know what bank has stepped forward yet. That is not clear.
And it's a possibility that there could be further pressure put on this bank by U.S. officials. And is that a possibility?
Right. That's what's unclear. You know, this isn't something that has been codified and that, you know, the U.S. has said, you know, banks may process certain transactions, you know, if it is for, you know, educational purposes, something like that. It seems to be a very ad hoc fix right now. And, you know, I think this is a case where we see the U.S. having to put out a fire. Instead of proactively taking action before the sanctions went into effect to ensure that we wouldn't hurt innocent Iranian people, and especially hurt such an important demographic as young Iranians who want to study in the U.S. and, you know, interact with the world, instead of seeing that happen, the U.S. went for the toughest sanctions possible, the most draconian measures possible. And as a result, we're now seeing that they're having to step in and put out this fire. It's unclear if they're going to have to put out further fires. And
Let's hear what President Obama has been saying about Iran. In March, he said in a message to the Iranian people for Nowruz, the Iranian New Year, that he was hoping to increase educational ties between the two countries. Let's listen.
Even as we continue to have differences with the Iranian government, we will sustain our commitment to a more hopeful future for the Iranian people. For instance, by increasing opportunities for educational exchanges so that Iranian students can come to our colleges and universities.
So there's some irony here. Jamal Abdi, does President Obama's statement back in the spring suggest that just what you were saying the Obama administration should do, that there might be some intervention here that would, that would solidify what the Educational Testing Service is doing and actually exempt it from sanctions?
Well, you know, that might be the case. It's clear that the president understands how important, you know, young people in Iran are. He understands that 60% of Iran is young people under 30. He understands how important it is for these young people who are kind of, you know, the leaders of this democratic opposition that has cropped up in Iran. And, you know, they're the folks who want to interact with the world and see Iran become more accountable. And, you know, they want opportunities. President Obama understands that. But it's a question of, you know, he made this promise. Does that mean he's just going to protect young Iranians from further sanctions? Or are we actually going to see some proactive steps from the administration to make it, you know, to expand opportunities rather than just keep the status quo? Because the status quo is actually not even that great. Iranian students who want to study in the U.S. are only allowed to have a single-entry visa, which we hear a lot of students who are currently studying here complain about. What that means is that when they leave Iran to come here for, you know, undergrad or graduate studies, they can't leave the U.S. for the entire duration of those studies. So for 4, 6, 7 years, they have to stay in the U.S. even if they have a family emergency, even if they want to go travel to a, you know, educational conference abroad. They're not allowed to leave because we have this single-entry policy for Iranians. And that's a policy that doesn't apply to very many other countries. There are only, I think, Cuba is the only other country where single-entry visa policies for students is in effect. And we are hoping to see that the president would address that and, you know, do something positive. What we're seeing now is that in order to make his promises jive with what he's doing on sanctions, we're really just maintaining the status quo.
We can take calls from any foreign students on the barriers they face in studying here. Call the Brian Lehrer Show, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Amy Eddings sitting in for Brian Lehrer, speaking with Jamal Abdi, Policy Director of the National Iranian American Council, and Scott Jazchik, editor of Inside Higher Education. Scott, I wanted to bring you into the conversation. Jamal was speaking about visas, foreign visas. How many foreign visas are given out each year?
Well, I can tell you how many. Right this year, we have about 671,000 foreign students in the United States, and that number has been edging up. The numbers took a hit after 9/11 when visas became much more difficult to get. Right now, there are very few Iranian students. There are about 3,500 Iranian students, according to the most recent data, and those numbers were much higher before the fall of the Shah of Iran. So there have been periods where you had much higher Iranian enrollments in the United States. Getting a visa can be a difficult issue. And what you have, and the sanctions here are typical of this, is foreign student enrollments frequently are sort of the unintended consequence of broader policies. So after 9/11, the United States says, we're very concerned about who's coming into the United States. The target wasn't legitimate foreign students, but foreign students got caught up in that, and it became much harder for people from certain parts of the world to come here. It's always been the case that a lot of diplomats and educators have thought that bringing in foreign students from parts of the world where maybe not everybody agrees with or appreciates the United States can be a great educational thing and a great thing for U.S. foreign policy, but it runs up against, in this case, sanctions, in other cases, calls for tighter security.
Bob from Manhattan has a different point of view. Bob, thanks for calling WNYC.
Thank you. I believe that, one, the students in Iran, if they're so concerned, they should fight their government and make change. That's not going to happen. We know that. I do not, as a U.S. citizen, want anybody, regardless of I shouldn't say regardless of what country, but anybody from a country whose policies run counter to ours, to come over and study and take the education, take the technology that they've learned here and bring it back to potentially use to counter U.S. interests. What I do think is that education is a very economic game, and the universities and colleges and organizations that are doing the educating are looking for this tuition, as is the educational testing service. So it's really a numbers game. If the Iranian students really want to come over here, they need to push their government to stop acting in manner that is counter to the U.S.
Bob,
could I jump in there for a second?
Yes, this is Scott.
Yeah, this is Scott Jasek with Inside Higher Ed. First of all, I think it's important to note that many Iranian students are, in fact, taking to the streets and have quite courageously taken stands against their government, facing risks far worse than, say, U.S. college students face when they protest. I also think it's important to look at the impact of a U.S. education on a student from a country where what they would learn and, you know, growing up would be, you're right, might be quite hostile to U.S. interests. But there's quite a history of people who have studied here becoming staunch advocates for democracy, for our style of education, and in some cases for our foreign policy. I actually think there are huge benefits educationally and politically from open doors.
Mike from Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mike.
Unfortunately, the guest just made the comment that I was going to make about, we base our perceptions of countries mainly from what we see in the media. And a lot of times those perceptions change once when we go to that place and you engage with the people and you deal with people on a person-to-person level rather than just listening to a newscast. So I think there's a benefit to having these students here. But, you know, what about the other way around? I mean, can't we send American students over to Iran? Because every, you know, tourist video I see, like Globe Trekker, these travel shows, I mean, they don't look like that. Iran from those shows, you know, they don't look like the devil. So it seems that we can both learn, you know, from each group can learn from each other if we can have some exchange, you know, on both sides.
Mike, thanks for your call. Jamal Abdi, I'm going to toss that question to you. When Mike talks about it working both ways, I'm also wondering if it works both ways with the Iranian government. Does the Iranian government frown upon or create barriers for American students to study there?
Yeah, you know, it is difficult for American students to study in Iran. And I think that, you know, this speaks to the point that has been repeated that, you know, allowing Iranians to study here, it benefits the, you know, democracy movement in Iran, where students are the central element of that. You know, the universities in Iran are the lockeye for this democratic opposition that has come out of Iran. And, you know,
because of that, is there a crackdown from the Iranian government to prevent Iranian students from coming to the United States? Is it not just a barrier that the U.S. is possibly placing, a barrier that, as you reported earlier, has been removed with this bank stepping forward to allow this testing service to process payments for the TOEFL test, but the Iranian government, you're saying, is also putting up barriers to keep its students from interacting with the United States.
The Iranian government is very comfortable with a population that is isolated, that is disconnected from the outside world, that is easier to repress. There are even reports that the Iranian government is seeking to divert students who would otherwise study in the U.S. or Europe and convincing them to study in China and Russia, to the point where they're even, you know, if you have a government scholarship, you're not allowed to study in the U.S. And that's a signal that these policies that we think are benefiting, you know, the U.S. and our national security, we've actually run out of things to sanction, and now we're sanctioning the activities that benefit the U.S. and benefit the people of Iran and eliminate kind of these soft power programs that we have in place. I think the Iranian government would be happy to see these tests suspended forever and to force Iranian students to either have no opportunities to interact with the outside world or go study in universities in China and Russia and increase the influence of those countries.
Ben from West Nyack, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ben.
Hi. I'd just like to comment on what the caller was saying earlier about the Iranian students not being for the U.S. government. I mean, after the last election, they were out there protesting for 2 weeks against the supposed election of Ahmadinejad. And I've personally been a student at George Washington University, which is a very international campus. I met students from all over the place, and everyone seemed to enjoy the United States, pick up its values, and I don't see any negatives about it.
Ben, thank you for your call. Scott Jaschik, I wanted to follow up with a question about other alternative tests besides the TOEFL. Are there other tests that can be used to measure English language ability, and if there continues to be further problems with the educational testing service, could these tests be a gateway for international students to get into the United States?
Potentially, yes. There's a test called IELTS that is sort of like the TOEFL equivalent that started in Britain and was the commonly used test for students who wanted to go to British universities. And there's also a new test from Pearson. And they all have different ways of looking at, of measuring how students can demonstrate that they have the English language skills necessary to succeed at an English language university. Depending on when ETS was frozen, IELTS indicated they could still operate, again, because the sanctions have to do with paying for the test and exchange of money more than the test itself. And so, you know, but particularly with the news that ETS has found a way to process it, my guess is that taking the tests is but one obstacle. You've got the visa issue, you've got paying for it, you've got the opposition of the Iranian government, you've got a lot of factors that make it quite tough, I think, for Iranian students who want to study here. And yet the attractiveness is not only the, you know, the outstanding qualities of U.S. universities, but the completely different concept of the life of the mind here compared to a government that squelches a lot of ideas.
Steve from Stony Brook, you're on WNYC. Hi, Steve.
Hi, good morning. Just a quick comment regarding the previous comment that was made by one of your guests. So I'm a graduate student. I'm in my last year. I'm in a very difficult science. And just a comment, it would be very easy to limit the two or three very specific subtopics of the thousands of topics that are, you know, covered in advanced graduate studies in science to be able to simply prohibit the Iranian nationals. I, speaking from personal experience, I'm in the gross minority as an American and an American-born citizen in the department, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I'm simply saying that it would be very easy to limit the very specific subfields that could potentially be a threat to Americans once these students have defended and gotten their PhDs and left the United States. So it would be very, very easy.
How easy? Like, what are you proposing that, say, in the field of nuclear physics that...
Well, you're exactly right. That's a perfect
university
example.
Some edict goes out, some federal requirement goes out that no students from Iran are accepted for graduate programs in this field of study.
Correct. You're exactly right, Andrea. It would be very, very specific. Nuclear physics with respect to nuclear engineering and design, for example, of nuclear power plants, and all of the basic modern physics that goes along with that at the graduate level with respect to the actual nuclear physics of, you know, fission, fusion, the actinide and lanthanide theories. Sorry to get technical. The daughter isotopes, if you will, of the uranium isotopes that.
Steve,
so
I'm sorry.
It would be very, very easy.
Thank you so much, Steve. Thanks for your call. Scott, you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, I wanted to speak to that. I think one of the important issues to remember as well is the U.S. isn't the only nation with universities where people can study advanced physics. And per the comment earlier about the Iranian government encouraging people to go to Russia, we may be giving ourselves a false sense of security that we think, oh, if we don't let in Iranian students, there's no danger of them learning certain things that we might be afraid of them learning. First of all, other Western nations are very aggressively going after foreign students. The U.S. doesn't have a monopoly in the way that it perhaps once did. And some of the nations that want Iranian students or other students from around the world aren't necessarily looking to do it for the more altruistic reasons of also exposing them to a democracy. So the idea that either they learn physics here or nowhere may give people a false sense of security.
Ali from the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ali.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have to, first of all, the issue that you raised when I made the phone call this morning, the issue has been kept getting completely clouded. Issue number one, TOEFL has never been had any center in Iran for past 30 years. I'm a student. I took the TOEFL when I was in Mashhad. I came to this country. I'm a U.S. citizen. What happened after 1981, TOEFL closed all their centers in Iran. So your Iranian guest completely misleading. What they do, Iranian students right now, they go to countries like Dubai, Turkey, take the TOEFL. So it's not like TOEFL was making a new invention. What is happening, recently somebody took over ETS, which is, I believe, is a Republican, using Office of Technology Assets rules applying to TOEFL, which was never applicable to that. So this is completely what I call a propaganda by this Iranian guest. Issue of technology transfer. First of all, Chinese coming to this country, study fusion, nuclear facility, and taking it back. So issue of if a foreign student comes here and do technology transfer, there is no way you can block that. Because you got Chinese coming here, Russians are coming here, you got communist countries like Venezuela,
right,
all
Ali,
these countries.
Yes, Ali and
so
Scott.
Let's the subject.
Yeah,
the subject.
Our guest Scott addressed that issue, but I'd love to have Jamal Abdi's response to your earlier concerns about his representation of TOEFL. Jamal, you wanted to respond to Ali's comment?
Sure. Well, you know, ETS has been operating in Iran since 1964, I believe, and they do offer the TOEFL test at several locations around Iran. I do know that a lot of students end up taking the TOEFL overseas, though, or abroad, because there aren't as many opportunities to take the test as one would like. I think there are only five locations where they actually offer the test. But it's not true that the TOEFL isn't offered in Iran.
And it is. What do you think of? I'm sorry. What do you think of Ali's point that there might have been more political gamesmanship going on beneath this than just, oh, gee, these new sanctions went into place. We can't process these payments. Therefore, we're not offering this test to Iranians. Scott, you want?
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't. I'm not going to pretend to have been in the hearts and minds of the folks at ETS, but generally, ETS benefits when more students take their tests. So I think they have a lot of incentive to want to offer their tests in Iran and everywhere. Their competitors do, as is seen. They managed to work out a solution that has just been announced. And I also think that people who work in international education genuinely believe that it's a good thing to have people exposed to other cultures. That's why they invite foreign students to American universities. That's why they encourage American students to do study abroad.
Jamal Abdi, last word.
I think that what we can learn from this is just that we can't continue to only seek ways to pressure Iran that's going to hurt the Iranian people. We have to figure out ways that we can actually take positive measures to increase opportunities for regular Iranians who are the greatest allies of democracy and human rights and accountability in Iran. By taking measures that only seek to pressure people in Iran, we're shooting ourselves in the foot.
Jamal Abdi is policy director of the National Iranian American Council. Scott Jazcik, editor of Inside Higher Ed. Thank you both for joining us here on the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC.
Thank you.
Coming up, the massive oil slick in the Gulf is disappearing, but where is it going? The long-term effects of the spill on the seas. Stay tuned.